Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, and for the purposes of this show, political pundit, Dr. Tony Weaver.
If you say so, they're political pundit.
I can make political puns. That's about the best I can do. Rick and I are not politicians, and I am not terribly political, but we did feel it was important to salute our governor-elect, talk a little bit about how that might affect your health care and the state's health care, and that's why we put together the Salute to Matt Bevin show. Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio and from the University of Kentucky to correct any misperceptions, to fact check, and to set the tone of the debate. Manager of Communications Infrastructure, who will also discuss our web presence, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know you can get the audio of the show at WMKY.org. What is that? That's the Health Matters. That's actually not the Health Matters. Ooh, that's Moorhead State Public Radio's. They put that whole shell of a website up there just so they can house the Health Matters page. That's what it's for. So the Moorhead State Public Radio website, look through the menus, find Health Matters, look at the list of the most recent shows. You'll get a little summary that can kind of give you an idea. Maybe you heard a show and you're trying to figure out what we were, you know, you wanted to listen to it again. Well, maybe that summary will help you. Maybe you'll just have to listen to them all. We're not going to tell you, but they're there in case you want to. If you like podcasts, you can sign up for the podcast there. If you know what a podcast is, then you know what to do. And if you don't know what a podcast is, I would recommend Wikipedia. After that, jump over to Facebook.com. Do a search for HM Radio Show. That is the fan page on Facebook for you. You get to, you radio fans, you get to interact with Health Matters. Ask us questions, send us comments, let us know what you like, let us know what you didn't like. That is your way to interact with the, let's just say, the host of the show, because he's on their way more than me. He's a Facebook fanatic.
I am.
He loves it. But anyway, you'll see stuff there, though. Some of the research that gets talked about on the show gets posted there, although less lately. Now it's been more news, kind of relevant items that have come through the local news or the regional news or even national news. Again, interact with the show. Facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
Our sponsor, the Medicare open enrollment season. That's right. It's open season on your insurance. The price of bucking Obamacare is about to increase, so you need to know this. Let's go back to 2015, the tax filings back in on April 15th. $7.5 million paid a fine because they did not have insurance, and there is an individual mandate in the Affordable Care Act. 7.5 million taxpayers, $1.5 billion. There were also 12 million who had exemptions due to hardships. Initially, the Treasury Department thought there would be about 3 to 6 million, but in fact, 7.5 million taxpayers were fined last year. Now, this is a three-year phase-in on this penalty. In 2015, the penalty was $325 per adult and $160 and change per child, or 2% of household income, whichever is higher. That's what you had to pay if you didn't have insurance when you filed in 2015. In 2016, next April, it goes from $325 to $695 per adult. It goes from $160 and change up to $347 and change per child, or 2.5% of household income, whichever is higher. 15% of uninsured Americans knew when open enrollment was, 17% of the general public. So here we will tell you, open enrollment started November 1st, and goes through December 15th. That's the last day to enroll for coverage to start on January 1st. Enrollment actually ends January 31st, 2016. Now, the problem is then, if you're going to buy insurance for the year 2016, if you're going to avoid that $695 per adult or 2.5% of household income penalty that you're going to see in April, you have to get enrolled before January 31st. So be aware of it. Enrollment season, again, November 1st through December 15th to be covered on January 1, November 1 through January 31 to be covered by March. And if you do not have a plan when you file income tax, you will be penalized. $695 per adult, $347 per child, 2.5% household income on your 2016 tax filings. It is open season on the Affordable Care Act insurance.
If you say so.
Yep. So, well,
you know, what happens. You talk about, you know, stuff like this, and you talk about drugs. I'm just going to go do my thing, and you tell me when it's time to talk.
Well, the thing is, people need to know, and it discourages me.
What do they need? What do people need to know?
They need to know when they are allowed to enroll. They don't want to wait until past January 31st.
Do you think the website will work this time?
I think the national website and Kentucky's website, at least for the time being, Kentucky's website will work as well.
Well, there have been some suggestions that stuff may go away, but you know, who knows what he's going
to
do?
Well, that's a big question. We'll try to make some speculations here. At least we have some a few facts. And when did that ever stop us before?
Right.
Again,
when did we ever need those to have a show?
For you unaware, Matt Bevin, who is a Republican of, we think, the Tea Party persuasion. Is that fair, Rick? I mean, you know a little bit more about Republican politics than I do. He would be considered a Tea Party A.
Yes.
Okay. Republican. Was elected governor. It was a surprise result, at least for those who were looking at the pre-election polls, but it was a decisive result, and his election to governor throws into doubt a couple of things. Now, this comes from Andrea Malgi, who is a political scientist at Transylvania University, looked at the numbers and found with a almost certainty there was a relationship between counties' Medicaid enrollment and the gubernatorial vote. And what's interesting is the larger the Medicaid numbers, that is, the higher percentage of the county that got Medicaid, the more likely they were to favor Bevin. Those counties that had low levels of Medicaid were more likely to favor Jack Conway. So, you know, what it says, at least what they're speculating, is this election, above all else, was really not about health care, even though this was really a choice between two different opinions on how to go forward with health care in the state of Kentucky. It did not appear to be about health care, because people who got health care seemed to be voting for the person who pledged to cut health care. Fascinating thing.
It's funny, on his website, he calls himself a conservative Republican, not a Tea Party here.
Okay. Rick has pulled up Bevin.
Just making sure. Hey, we have people, believe it or not, there are people who actually check our facts. So we have to make sure they're right. Isn't that correct, Tony?
Yeah.
Thank you for being factual on that.
You may be aware, Matt Bevin has said that he wishes to roll back Medicaid. And for a moment, I just want to remind our radio fans that when the Affordable Care Act passed, one of the pillars of the Affordable Care Act was that there were drastic cuts to states' Medicaid funds and to state budgets if they did not, in fact, expand Medicaid. These cuts went to the Supreme Court and were found to be unconstitutional. They were abolished, and at that point, state participation was voluntary. Many states, many of them with Republican governors or Republican legislatures, chose not to participate. Kentucky did participate, and we have signed up over 400,000 people onto the state's Medicaid rolls, pushing it over 1.1 million. A quarter of the state's citizens are on Medicaid. Now, the ones who were added, who were above the poverty guidelines that had been in place before, the federal government paid 100% of their Medicaid expansion fee. Even the ones who were added, who would have been eligible for Medicaid anyway, the federal government picked up around 70% of their fees, which is what it did for all of our previous Medicaid people. So we have two reimbursement rates from the federal government. The new people with higher incomes, not previously eligible, 100% paid. The old people, the people that were always eligible, 70% paid by the federal government. The state is on the hook for 0% of the new ones and 30% of the old ones. And they maintain their status as new or old. Bevin would like to roll back the new ones because we are going to have to start paying for them beginning in 2017.
Right.
By 2020, we'll be paying 10% of their Medicaid bills. The feds were still paying 90%. The problem is, once Kentucky made a deal with the feds, the unconstitutional part, where you could choose voluntarily whether to participate or not, went away. That is, it would be constitutional if Kentucky made a deal to expand Medicaid and then went back on our part of the deal for the feds to go back on their part of the deal. So it looks like there is a substantial financial penalty to backing out. And I think this will, in many ways, will influence how Matt Bevin. And that's I've heard from a couple of folks that actually know what they're talking about, saying that this probably is going to be very difficult for him to roll back the Medicaid expansion because it's going to come at an extreme financial penalty to the state. And as the shining example of Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act, if we roll that back, the wrath of the feds will be considerable.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think, you know, rolling back the plan, do I have any, you know, insight into anything that he's thinking or doing? Absolutely not. Do I even, I've never even been in the same, probably not been in the same city together. But I think, you know, when you get back to those core kind of Republican, and being that he's a conservative Republican, he's going to be closer to some of the core values. You know, I think some of this should be at least looked at. Now, I wouldn't, don't know that I'd go as far as to say we need to roll it back or get it out, but I do think there is nothing wrong with taking a look at programs that basically, you know, and I hate to use the word entitlement programs, but taking out these programs, we should look at them. Not saying you should do something, not saying you should make a suggestion that they need to go, but we should constantly be evaluating things that we do, because frankly, Tony, in your life, think about all the things that have changed over time. And the thing is, as we get older, the one thing we learn is that change comes faster and harder. It's faster and harder, faster and harder. And the thing is, change, you know, 10 years ago, how often did you have a phone to your ear?
Okay, not as often as now. That's absolutely true.
So, I mean, just think about how we've let, but think about the first years of your life. Communication through a telephone didn't change much, but then the radical change that's occurred in the last 10 years has been dramatic. Technology and the way we live and the way we do things are just constantly evolving and changing. And so what happens is you find inefficiency, you find expense, you find all the things that are frankly crippling to budgets and to process. If things have changed around the environment, sometimes the environment needs to change as well, or the program or the process. So anyway, I'm just saying what he's proposing here from a Republican standpoint, I think we should look at these things. Now, does that mean we need to tear them down? Absolutely not. It just means let's review the decisions we've made in the last 3 to 5 years and make sure they're still on track. Right? Because sometimes you have to make strategic changes. Sometimes they require a left turn, a right turn, a full stop, an about face. There's all kinds of decisions that have to make, but none of that can happen if you don't at least take a good hard look at it.
We at Health Matters really don't have a political inning. We're going to try to analyze what changes might occur.
Exactly. It should be looked at.
Yeah. And I've got a couple of things for our second fractional portion we'll talk about.
I was successful, wasn't I?
Yeah.
I was totally successful.
You know what Rick did? I mean, Rick had, there was absolutely nothing in the past 3 minutes that you said that made any difference at all. You just wanted to talk up to the end of the fractional portion.
I spared our listeners from one of your rants.
And you put in one of your rants, which has even less purpose.
But they can turn mine off and they'll know when I'm done. They can know to turn back over to you.
So again, verbal anesthesia from Rick Phillips. When we come back, we're going to talk some about why Matt Bevin feels that Medicaid expansion doesn't accomplish anything, that it serves no purpose. We'll talk about that, and we'll also talk about Connect. Meanwhile, take a break. Think about this. Reconsider your vote. Think carefully. Did you vote the right way this election? How sorry are you? Or how elated are you? That's true, but we just want to make you feel bad or good. And tune in for our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Salute to Matt Bevin Show.
Salute.
Thanks.
Salute. Did you ever watch E-Haw?
Yes. But
I'm sure you did.
You're not going to stall the second program. We're going to talk about something reasonably important anyway. And we're not talking about E-Haw. But I will point out our show's producer during the break, Hunter Reese, informed us that, reminding us that we can talk, apparently, we can do a salute to Communist China. We can talk about the Kardashians. We believe we can talk at least some about political issues. And apparently the only thing people will write in about is grapefruit. So as long as we don't mention grapefruit, we should be in good shape.
I still don't like it.
Yeah. Not going there. Got enough on my plate without worrying about grapefruit. Second time for our sponsor, which is Obamacare Open Enrollment, reminding you it is open season on your health insurance. There is a penalty called the individual mandate. You are required to purchase health insurance unless you are a veteran, unless you have extreme financial circumstances, unless you are on Medicare, unless you are already on Medicaid. Everyone should have some type of insurance, says the Affordable Care Act. There is a penalty for having no insurance, for being uninsured, unless you are in one of those groups. And I've got to say as well, Native Americans are exempt from that penalty. But if you are not one of those groups, in 2014, if you did not have insurance, insurance. When you filed in 2015, you were penalized $325 per adult, $160.50 per child, or 2% of household income, whichever is higher. This upcoming spring, when you file your 2015 taxes, if you do not, at the time of filing, have insurance, it's $695 per adult, $347.50 per child, or 2.5% of household income, whichever is higher. Open enrollment for purchasing insurance for the year 2016 started November 1st, goes through December 15th to be enrolled January 1st, goes through January 31st to be enrolled by March, and after January 31st, unless something happens, a divorce, a death in the family, a new job, something like that, you will not be able to purchase insurance on the exchanges. If you do not have that insurance when you file, you will be paying the penalty. So we're reminding you, the open enrollment season, November 1 through December December 15th to be covered January 1st, November 1 through January 31st to be covered at all in 2016, again, unless something happens either good or bad to you during the year, which might qualify you for one for a an insurance plan that you were not qualified for when you started. So keep this in mind. Otherwise, when you file your income taxes, you may be hit with an unpleasant surprise. Again, to summarize last session, we said absolutely nothing.
Well, I said less than you.
I know, but I got to my key point, and then all of a sudden Rick goes on this. I don't know what that was. That was almost a George Herbert Walker Bush farm animal speech. I suppose Rick is under the influence of some form of sedative. I don't know what it is. None of my business.
Provide me my drink tonight. Yeah. So, I'm probably sipping on something.
You probably, unknowingly? I don't know. Well, I certainly didn't expect that. I guess I was hoping you would just actually snooze rather than use up our time this week.
I told you, there's a few things you can talk about I'll go to sleep on. Just start talking.
Okay. Here we go. Again, Matt Bevin elected on the idea that he would, in fact, reverse the Medicaid expansion. That may be difficult to do financially because we have made an agreement with the feds. We believe and have it under some fairly good from some fairly good sources that the penalties for rolling back after having made accepted the deal of Medicaid expansion may be substantially stiffer than simply returning to the reality that existed before we expanded Medicaid. Now, one thing that you will hear from Matt Bevin, and I'm quoting him from a town hall forum back in September. He says, studies have shown that people on Medicaid have worse health outcomes than people who have no insurance at all. Say it again. According to Matt Bevin, studies have shown that people on Medicaid have worse health outcomes than people who have no insurance at all. He's close to right on that, depending on how you measure outcomes. This was the New England Journal of Medicine. It was back in May of 2013, and they looked at the Oregon experiment. Oregon has done a lot of things with their Medicaid that are advanced, somewhat revolutionary. And back in 2012, they had a lottery, and they had people sign up for the lottery, and they picked 12,000 people who were not eligible at the time for Medicaid, and they said, we're going to give you Medicaid. These are low-income people, but not eligible for Medicaid. If you win this lottery, 12,000 of you are going to get Medicaid. And I may be wrong about the 12,000 I look at it. At any rate, they interviewed 12,000 people to see how that turned out. They gave a bunch of people, and I may have the wrong number there, but they gave a bunch of people
Medicaid. Go ahead and say the wrong.
Well, see, there you go. Fact checkers are going to check my facts. But they did do some interviews and see what giving people access to Medicaid for low income, able-bodied, uninsured adults, what would that do? First of all, and this was the big thing that it did, and this is not surprising, if you give them insurance, which is Medicaid, it reduces the financial strain of medical costs. If you look at catastrophic medical expenditures, you spend more than 30% of your income on healthcare. That is a healthcare catastrophe. The chances of that drop more than 80% when they expanded Medicaid. And you would expect that. Medicaid covers these things, so you don't have to spend a third of your income on some disease, and that actually dropped more than 80%. Expanding Medicaid coverage to these lottery people, increased number of prescription drugs received, increased number of office visits, no changes in emergency department visits or hospital admissions. So in that sense, did not seem to prevent hospitalization in this group. Increased some preventative care and screening services, cholesterol screening up 15%, people actually going to a doctor's office for care up 24%. No effect on the probability a person was a smoker or was obese. And Rick, that makes perfect sense to me. Having insurance is not going to make me thinner.
Okay.
I can go to a doctor. The doctor can say, you should be thinner.
Is it okay if I talk now?
Yeah, sure. I'll let
no,
you
no,
talk.
No, no, no. I'm just asking. I'm thinking about
level.
Commenting, but I'm not going to.
Okay. All right. So no effect on the possibility. Expanding Medicaid did not make a difference between not. Medicaid coverage, no
so
effect.
You're saying that if I get insurance, I won't lose weight?
I'm saying if you were in Oregon back in 2012 and you were one of these people who won the lottery and you were uninsured and now you have Medicaid, it appears for most of them, it didn't make any difference in their weight.
Okay. So I'm just going to be this way the rest of my life. Sorry.
Well, insurance is not going to do it for you. There may be some other things. We can talk to your wife about that. None of my business, but perhaps there are other things that might actually stimulate you. But apparently insurance is not going to do it. No effect on the diagnosis of high blood pressure or high cholesterol or on the use of medications. That's an interesting thing to me. They could not measure an effect on the use of medications. One of the things is apparently Oregonians have lower rates of high blood pressure and high cholesterol than in Kentucky, because I really think that we probably would prescribe more cholesterol medicines if uninsured people were on Medicaid. It increased the probability of diabetes and increased the medications for diabetes, but we couldn't tell it led to better control of the sugar. And once again, that's a lifestyle and diet change that has to happen, not just a medication change. Not particularly surprising of that. They mentioned a couple of things about it. First of all, these diseases weren't that common in the Medicaid population that they expanded to, so they may not have had the ability to see that. And whether or not these things would be clinically significant, maybe the measurements were wrong. Maybe the low-income uninsured population in Oregon differs from the U.S. Certainly it would differ from Kentucky, we know that. And then maybe this subgroup, these lottery people, were different than people who would have gotten it with the expansion. And then the other thing they talked about is, well, this didn't really change hospitals and clinics in Oregon because there weren't enough people. Whereas I will tell you the Kentucky expansion has had a significant effect, particularly in rural Kentucky, rural eastern Kentucky, on your ability to maintain hospitals and clinics, because before they were losing a lot of money for free care. So that is what Bevin quotes. That's the study, New England Journal of Medicine, May 2nd, 2013, where they used a lottery to expand their Medicaid program. They were able to save people from financial ruin. I didn't mention this, but they were able to diagnose and treat more depression and other mental illnesses than they had before. They could not see an impact on diabetes, high blood pressure, or high cholesterol that they could measure with numbers changing or health being improved. So when Matt Bevin says, well, their health is worse than uninsured, that's not necessarily so, but at least by some measures, it's not better than the uninsured. And, you know, I got a chance to look here to give you an idea of what's different between Oregon and Kentucky. The Gallup poll just reported a self-reported incidence of heart attack by state. Where do you think, Rick, the states are that have the lowest self-reported incidence of heart attack? That is, people who, when you go around, you say, hey, have you had a heart attack? And the lowest percentage of people that say, yep, I had a heart attack, where do those people live?
I don't know. That's tough. I mean, so it's places that have a lot of them that they don't want to fess up to it?
You know, you might be right on that.
Are we talking about deception, or are we talking about just reality, where there's most of them are?
Because we'll assume for the moment that people are honest.
So Mississippi, Kentucky, Louisiana,
yeah, are going to have the
South.
Highlights. Here we go. Our bottom 10, coming in at number 10, New York. I have no idea why. Washington.
Well, they don't want anybody to know.
Maybe so. Illinois. Oregon's number 7 from the bottom with a heart attack rate of 3.2%. If you go and ask Oregonians if they had a heart attack, 3.2% of them are going to say yes. New Jersey at number 6, Colorado number 5, Alaska number 4, California 3, Hawaii number 2, and the number 1 state with the lowest rate of heart attack in the nation, 2.4%, is Utah.
Oh, you mean with the low? Okay, see, I totally misunderstood you. I thought you meant of reporting that they,
Yeah, but here's the highest rates coming in at number 41.
Let's do the highest rates.
Now, keep in mind, Utah was 2.5%, 2.4%. At 5.4%, Maine, 5.5%, Ohio, Oklahoma, up to 5.8% in Tennessee. Rhode Island comes in at 6%. Arkansas, 6.2%. Vermont slips in at 6.3%. I think that may be due to some changes they did in their insurance, because their risk factors are lower than any other state in the bottom 10. I don't understand that. Kentucky, 6.4%.
Yep. And we're getting closer.
Yeah. So Utah was 2.4%. We are 6.4%. Oregon, 3.2%. We're 6.4%. We have double the heart attack rate of Oregon. So when you start looking at does Medicaid make a difference, keep in mind we are twice as likely to have had a heart attack as people in Oregon in general. South Dakota, 6.4%. Once again, don't understand that. And then dead last at 7.7%, West Virginia. And you look at the risk factors, and I'm going to do West Virginia and Kentucky on risk factors just to let you know. In West Virginia, 49% have high blood pressure, 50% have high cholesterol, 50% have diabetes, and 49% have obesity in this poll. In Kentucky, 47% with high blood pressure, 46% with high cholesterol, 41% with diabetes, and 44% with obesity. Go to Utah, 2% high blood pressure, 3% high cholesterol, 8% diabetes, 11% obesity. It is just a different world out there. And so I'm saying it's a little tricky trying to extrapolate Oregon experiments to Kentucky. But Matt Bevin is close to right, maybe not worse by giving them Medicaid, but in the Oregon experiment, which is really the only time we have looked at the effects of expanding Medicaid scientifically and track data, it does not appear to cause a major improvement in their physical health. It does protect them financially when you do that. Next up, what about Matt Bevin and Connect?
What about Matt Bevin and Connect, Tony?
Okay. This is interesting to me because, again, I don't want to twist things around and find irony where there isn't irony. But Connect.
But there's some irony here.
There really is some irony. He wants to dismantle Connect. And as opposed to Medicaid, I think he can probably do that.
So why don't you make sure all of our listeners know what Connect is, Tony?
Okay. Connect is Kentucky's health exchange. It is where you would go to buy insurance. And it's also where you would go to see if you were eligible for Medicaid. So it is an origination point for Medicaid. Dismantling Connect, though, would not change Kentucky Medicaid.
Right.
Because we would still have just as many people on Medicaid as we had before.
It's just a way to get to the stuff, right?
Yeah.
It's a way to get to the purchasing options.
Right. So it looks like Bevin would be interested in dismantling Medicaid. Now, Medicaid was built using federal funds.
Okay.
And I think that's a one-and-done deal. I do not expect, if we dismantle Medicaid, I think it is very unlikely that we will remantle Medicaid because
So what you're saying is it's subject to changes, but it's probably not subject to complete shutdown and restart.
Right, because it
reboot.
The feds gave us $280 million to start it.
Right.
It looks like, and I can't really find where this is, but some of the Democratic naysayers, as far as stopping Connect, they said it's probably going to cost us about $25 to $30 million to dismantle Connect. It would, and this is correct. It's going to take about a year. Yeah, year to 18 months. If he were to notify the feds now that he wants to switch Kentuckians over to the federal exchange, about a year to 18 months may cost $25 to $30 million. I can't find that reliably, but that's at least what his critics say, but he would be forfeiting the benefits of the $280 million. Here's the interesting thing, Rick. Right now, Connect, although it is, you can argue it's a government service and he's anti-government, they are fully funded by 1% surcharge on the insurance policies they write.
Right.
So in essence, you have a 1% tax on your insurance that you buy from Connect.
Okay.
The feds have a 3.5%.
A little cheaper.
3.5% versus 1%.
Right.
A little more expensive.
Okay.
See, Kentucky charges.
You're holding up fingers. I'm getting you.
Kentucky charges 1%. The feds charge 3.5%.
Right.
So, in essence, in order to dismantle Connect, we're going to have to
pay more.
Right. Which would be a tax increase of sorts. Paying more money to the government is a tax increase.
The tax increase to the people, not the government.
Right. The tax increase to the people who buy insurance, they're going to have to pay more money for it.
It's neutral for the state, right?
So you've got a Tea Party guy who's going to transfer responsibilities over to the federal government and raise the amount of money people pay the federal government, which seems the opposite of what the Tea Party would be standing for.
Yeah, it does make you scratch your head. And that's why, again, I go back to the whole there's an assessment period that I suspect will happen, that whether this actually happens or does not happen is all still a little too early to find out. Any person's going to come into this job, they're going to have to spend a few months, maybe even half a year, assessing situations. Yeah. I don't think you can come right in and make knee jerk.
Now, if it were financially unstable, and what we hear is that the 1% surcharge is covering their fees after the startup was financed by the feds.
Right.
If it were financially unstable, if it, I suppose, expanded the size of state government and required some other payments, but again, if it can write policies for a cheaper surcharge than the feds can, it makes it a tough argument. There needs to be some other information that I don't have to indicate that it that connects a bad deal for Kentucky.
Yeah.
And it may be there. I just don't know it.
Well, and again, you got to see how it all plays together. There's probably some interactions here with other things. And I mean, again, it's going to require a considerable assessment.
Fair enough. A considerable assessment.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you have to do, right? I mean, you know, Tony, when do you just walk out with your chainsaw and cut a tree down? Do you? No, I'm serious. Now, I know early in your young life, that was a common occurrence with you. But as you've grown older and wiser, have you or do you not take a lot of rope, a lot of time, and make one cut?
Yeah, well,
that doesn't kill anybody.
Yeah, that's the thing. I am much more, it's interesting. I thought as I got older, I really did. I thought I would be less careful because I don't have to worry about kids anymore. And wouldn't it be nice just to suddenly not be here? That'd be a lot better than, you know, getting chronic disease.
I'm staring at the definition of maturity in the eye right now.
I am very, very careful because I think what scares me is the disability. You know, I've seen enough people who lost their health. I don't want to do that.
Regardless of the health concerns, I mean, the fact is you have a concern that requires you to be more intricate in how you assess situations that you approach. Not any different than what he's about to, what Matt Bevin's about to go into. If he's going to attack this from a mature standpoint, he's going to assess what's in front of him.
Fair enough. I see where you're going
with
that.
And he's going to try to make surgical decisions, but it's going to have to be based in some fact.
Yeah. And it's interesting. We at Health Matters, again, and we being me, because I read about this, think that his hands are probably tied about insurance expansion. We didn't get into it this fractional portion, and we'll
and it's
stop.
My fault.
Yeah, but
I
we think
up.
That the means testing, the waiver he's talking about, may actually be a good idea to ease people off Medicaid. A little bit on that next fractional portion, but he has the ability to do connect, but we're not certain why he would do that. As Rick says, as a wise philosopher once said, three strikes and the iron's hot. That's the best we can say about this. Meanwhile, take a break, ponder those wise words, and come back for our third fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Salute to Matt Bevin Show.
Salute.
Congratulations to our governor-elect, and we've been talking about how that might affect health care. Just a brief summary.
Tony, you know, we had the last Republican governor on the show before he was the governor.
Yeah,
we've got like 1 week left to get him on the show. I don't think we're going to succeed.
No, I think Matt Bevin may be rather busy, probably busier than a grapefruit as I think about it.
Well, they're not very busy. Who eats those things?
So at any rate, our sponsor for the final time.
I'm glad you have to take the mail from
the Affordable Care Act open enrollment. That's right. It is open season on your insurance. According to the National Journal, this is November 4th, 7.5 million people paid the fine last year. They paid $1.5 billion total because they didn't have insurance. And there is a box on your tax form that says, do you have insurance? If not, please, in the words of Elmer Fudd, please remit. There is a 3-year phase-in of the penalty, and it is higher this year. Last year, $325 per adult. This year, $695 per adult. Last year, $160.50 per child. This year, $347.50 per child. Or 2% of your household income last year, 2.5% of your household income this year. So it is a substantially higher penalty in your 2016 filing for the year 2015 than it was last year. If you do not have insurance at the time of filing, this penalty may be due. If you are Native American, if you are on Medicaid or Medicare, have other insurance, have some exemption or hardship, there's lots of reasons why it would not be due. But if you are an average U.S. citizen and you're expecting to get a refund, in fact, this may cut substantially into your refund. Only 15% of uninsured Americans knew when open enrollment was, and only 17% of the general public. So we are here to tell you, open enrollment started November 1st, meaning starting starting November 1st, you can buy insurance policies on the Connect, the Kentucky Insurance Exchange. It goes through December 15th if you want to have a policy by January 1st. It goes through January 31st if you want to have a policy by tax time, by the end of March. So after January 31st, unless something happens to change your situation in a few specified ways, you will not be able to purchase insurance on Connect or any other exchange, no matter what Governor Bevin decides to do at that time. You will not be able to get that insurance. You will not be able to check that box. You will have to pay, again, if you're an average person who has no hardships or exemptions, you will have to pay that penalty. So keep that in mind. You're in the middle of the enrollment season. If you're going to buy insurance, get it now. You have till December 15th to get insurance that will take effect by January 1st. You have until January 31st to get any type of insurance on the exchanges, barring some unusual circumstances or hardship. That's our sponsor. Open enrollment, November 1st through January 31st. We're in the middle of it. Time to pick up your insurance so you will not pay the penalty on your taxes on April 15th. I'm going to go very quickly on this because, Rick, I have only opinions and no facts on this.
Go.
The other thing that Matt Bevin wants to do is he wants to apply for a federal waiver, and these waivers are fairly common for Medicaid experiments. It allows a state to alter their financing of Medicaid in such a way that they're trying out something new, and the feds work with the state, negotiate with them, and approve that. Indiana applied for a waiver to means test and to charge people for Medicaid. There are some parts of the Indiana experiment that we felt were rather extreme. That is, they had the Indiana people actually have the ability to kick people off Medicaid, which sounded, frankly, to us to be rather cruel. To be honest. But the idea of requiring some copay for Medicaid people at the top end of the income scale, I will tell you, I'm actually in favor of that. We're going to have trouble paying for that expansion anyway, and if we're locked into it, we have to generate those funds somewhere. At the upper ends of Medicaid, what I see in the free clinic is I see people who were on Medicaid and unfortunately made a little bit more money and got kicked off. And all of a sudden, they go from Medicaid, which pays most of their medical bills, to a $5,000 deductible plan where they're going to have to pay out of pocket for a substantial amount of their care in the upcoming year. So I believe if we could soften that by at the upper end of Medicaid starting to charge them a little bit, there wouldn't be such a shock if people did actually improve their lot in life and went to purchase private insurance. So I think that's a good thing, and that's all I'm going to say. I would like to see that tried because we're going to have a lot of trouble paying for this, and we need to be thinking of ways to generate some income to try to offset this rather than just having the state go bankrupt, drop their Medicaid reimbursements, and us get back into the situation we were before we expanded. So I think even those who want to keep Medicaid, you've got to look, as Rick said, you've got to look through a new set of glasses at this.
Exactly.
And see if we can find a way to pay for it. We are not totally opposed to that. Let me tell you, in this fractional portion, I'm going to run quickly through some other things that I found interesting, changes, if you will, things such as a Republican governor after a long string of Democratic governors that make you think that the world is shifting. This was from a magazine called Pharmacy and Therapeutics, and they were talking about medical marijuana as a business model for pharmacists. Did you ever think, Rick, that someone would say, you know what a good business plan is? You should start selling marijuana. That could really be a career for you. In 1969, 12% of U.S. adults were in favor of legalizing marijuana. In 2013, 58% of adults in favor of legalizing marijuana. So there is a majority now. And a portion feels that there are benefits. According to a 2013 survey from Pew Research Center, 77% of Americans ages 50 to 65 and 60% of those ages 65 or older agreed that it had legitimate medical uses. Now, I will tell you, scientifically, it's hard to prove that simply because the research is not there. But the majority of the public, 77% in their 50s and early 60s, 60% in their late 60s, and these are the senior citizens. These ought to be the keepers of morality in the United States, feel that marijuana has legitimate medical uses. We're in an odd situation where it is illegal at the federal level. It is a Schedule 1 substance, meaning that it is considered to have the same benefit to harm ratio as things like LSD. But in 2009, President Obama sent a memo encouraging federal prosecutors to stop prosecuting people. Hence, it now becomes possible for a pharmacist to be involved. 715 pharmacists found that 48% of them were in favor of pharmacist oversight. They like the idea of being in charge of the marijuana. There is little research to dictate the dosing. So Rick, imagine this is your job. Imagine you're a pharmacist and you're contemplating maybe getting into the marijuana distribution, medical marijuana distribution, as a way of generating income and perhaps paying your mortgage and paying the family's bill.
Don't you have 75 acres? We can do this.
Pharmacists who decide to pursue, I'm quoting this directly, pharmacists who decide to pursue this niche practice must be comfortable living with a certain level of risk and must understand that they will need to forge their own way in an industry just establishing its roots. When they say a little bit of risk, a certain level of risk, what they mean is, yeah, you could go to prison. That's still absolutely a possibility. Unlikely, again, I think the tide has turned here. But isn't that odd that now this is actually a career option for pharmacists to get involved in medical marijuana? Pharmacists have to rely on a drug profile. It is low toxic, but they have to figure out what is the best delivery method for their patient. Is it a brownie? Is it, in fact, the herb itself? Is it an oil? Do we put it in a vaporizer, an e-cigarette type thing, and vaporize it? How do we get the drug into the system? And I did get a flyer for marijuana candies. Yeah, they're nice, sparkling, kind of breath mint sort of things that are laced with marijuana and have a high marijuana content. Simply suck on them, and you will get the marijuana. One thing they mentioned, and this is one of the things that I think we ought to think about, marijuana, it turns out, ties up a couple of your body's metabolizing enzymes. So it is quite one thing for a young, healthy person to smoke marijuana to get high. It is quite another thing if you are on a number of medications. This is something, frankly, we don't have a lot of experience with. We don't have the research to say how it would affect your other medicines, but very clearly it will, and we will just have to figure this out as we go. There is the newly formed Academy of Medical Marijuana Dispensaries. That's formed through the Connecticut Pharmacists Association because they recently legalized marijuana. There's also the Cannabis Training Institute. It's an online training and education program to train pharmacists. So it may be that your pharmacist's next career option is to become a dispenser of marijuana, not in the state of Kentucky or Ohio, but in other states. It may be possible.
Man, I just don't know where I'm at on medical marijuana. It's a tough thing. And you know, the thing of it, Tony, is totally not related to anything you said. I mean, totally not related. I'm walking up and down Venice Beach, California, right? We're on vacation. And I couldn't go one city block on Venice Beach without these medical marijuana shops. And I mean, clearly, if I'd have had 20 or 30 bucks, I don't know what it cost. I don't know. But I could have walked in, told them I was had pain, and the next thing you know, I'd have been in there smoking a doobie.
Of course, you have to have again, the way the doctors prescribe medical marijuana, it's not like you say, take this much at this frequency. They simply give you a card that says, okay, you can purchase a certain amount of marijuana.
But in these particular places, they sit and sell it to you right in the same place, I assume. I mean, it was a little hole-in-the-wall places, but there was tons of them. I just couldn't believe how many there were.
But the way it works is you get your card. In this case, the pharmacist then could sit down and say, you know, you look like a marijuana lozenge man, or I think really for your problems, the best medical form of marijuana would be brownies. Edibles are, you need to get into edibles, young man. Edibles is where the future is. Something like that. This is really a bizarre notion to me. Now keep in mind, the FDA has never approved marijuana as a treatment because there isn't any research, because the feds won't allow research. And so medical marijuana is, I'm not saying I'm for it or I'm against it. I'm just simply saying there is no reliable knowledge out there about marijuana as a medicine. It's simply, if you have certain conditions, you get a card. That card allows you to purchase so much, and then you go and you use it. And we really don't have any idea of how it will affect you, how it will affect your other medications, because the FDA has not licensed it, and we've not done the research. It's an interesting thing, but you see how this thing is becoming legitimate in the sense of now pharmacists can plan a career as a marijuana dispensing pharmacist.
But that's something that I think we've talked about is now with Colorado being open up for recreational in Washington and the various places, now they should be able to do some independent research, right? That's totally legal.
Well,
it may not be able to be done by the federal government, but certainly the state of Colorado can do it.
But the feds have to reclassify it beyond a Schedule I substance. Otherwise, you know, I can go over, I can do population research. I can watch people across the street. What I can't do is to take it into the lab and work with it because I can't get a permit to use a significant amount in research.
Yeah, but so I guess the recreational users in Colorado, they still can't get enough to do the research with it?
Well, Yeah, it's illegal to do research. It is legal to treat medical things, and it's certainly legal for me to go ask them how they're doing, but it is not legal for me in the lab to try to figure out actually how it affects their metabolism. That would it's a Schedule I drug, and that's not possible. Just kind of interesting. Let me give you another thing. You know, we're talking here about things that are different. That's the theme of this final fractional portion, trying to move quickly. This was reported in Clinical Infectious Diseases Supplement, and I was just stunned. There was a meningitis, a much-feared meningitis strain, affecting only people in Africa. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation developed a vaccine for this, and they published a supplement in Clinical Infectious Diseases on the effect of the vaccine. Now, here's the numbers. In 1996, it sickened 250,000 people, this meningitis. It killed 25,000 people in a few months. The Gates Foundation developed a vaccine called Menafrivac, 50 cents a dose, produced in India, distributed it in 26 countries, and in 2013, down from 250,000 people, they reported four cases.
Wow.
You know, these vaccines, as a physician, you see these over and over again, and it's just painful to see people refusing a vaccine because in some way they feel that it has been laced with something that causes some strange symptoms, when you can cut 25,000 deaths down to four cases in 2 years.
That's amazing.
By distributing a vaccine, and you ask yourself, why don't we do this more? Why don't we treat more diseases with this? Stimulating your own immune system to take care of the disease is a marvelous thing, and yet it is something that we have become so used to in this country. We underestimate the power of vaccination. But here in Africa, you can see when a new strain of meningitis comes out exactly how powerful vaccines are.
Yeah, it's amazing. And, you know, in every fall, here we are with the fall show or the, you know, the Vaccination League sponsor. I mean, we're constantly harping on influenza vaccine. You know,
right.
And how many times do you read or hear or at the water cooler? Oh, I don't get that because that made my friend sick or did this or did, and you're thinking, you know, now granted, the flu vaccine isn't the same as what you're talking about.
It's a meningitis vaccine, yeah.
I mean, it's certainly not the same, but the mentality can be the same.
Yeah.
That they're both bad for you.
We Health Matters believe very strongly in vaccination. It is a wonderful thing. It is not side effect free. Nothing is.
No.
But
and
the benefits clearly outweigh the risk.
An element of risk, right. But the benefits outweigh the risk.
Absolutely. And it's interesting, you talk back to back about vaccination and marijuana. And what's the dangerous thing? Vaccination, right?
Right.
Yep.
Exactly.
Next up, another surprise. Retail clinics over 2,800 in the next 2 years. They will increase by 50%. There will be 2,800 walk-in clinics in pharmacies, retail chains, and supermarkets where they're not selling the marijuana. Capacity for 9 million more patients by 2017. Shifting to more sophisticated services for people with chronic illnesses. So far, it's been ankle sprains, upper respiratory infections, things like that in generally healthy people. They're trying to make a convenient place for chronically ill patients to go. Ideally, the model will complement traditional care rather than compete. They're not asking people to get follow-ups there, but they are trying to be a convenient resource for people who have chronic illnesses. It'll be a change. I'll tell you, the established physicians are worried that these clinics are going to try to skim money because these are business centers. They are much better at the business of medicine than a practitioner would be. On the flip side, it is hard to get access to doctors, and it's hard to get access to healthcare providers in general, especially in rural areas. Once again, Rick said it well. Let's calm down. Let's take a look at these things. Retail clinics may be the best thing for medicine, maybe the worst thing. Legalizing marijuana, vaccinations, all may be better or worse. I don't know. What's clear is we need to get off the air.
Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Hunter Reese and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember,
the Democratic Party's half century of decline across the South was all but complete after Kentucky elected a Republican governor who campaigned against abortion, gay marriage, and for a time, Obamacare.
The victory of Tea Party favorite Matt Bevin affirmed the appeal of outsider candidates challenging the establishment. In a year when real estate mogul Donald Trump and retired neurosurgeon Ben Carson are leading the party's presidential race,
Bevin, an investment manager who has never held public office, branded Democratic rival Jack Conway as a career politician. He ran television commercials calling Conway Kentucky Attorney General, pro-abortion, anti-coal, and a champion of President Obama's liberal agenda.
When Bevin is sworn in next month, Democrats will hold just two governorships in the South, in Virginia and in West Virginia. The sole legislative chamber that Democrats still control in the South is Kentucky's House of Representatives.
Since 2008, when Obama won the presidency, Democrats have lost 13 governorships and more than 900 state legislative seats across the U.S.
Kentucky's shift away from Democrats has been slower than some others, possibly due to Republican Governor Ernie Fletcher, who was caught in a political patronage scandal.
In Kentucky, Bevin campaigned as a Christian conservative businessman who would protect coal mining, a backbone industry in the Appalachians.
Bevin wound up backpedaling on his initial pledge to stop Medicaid expansion, saying he would continue to accept federal money to keep the newly insured covered, but would require some of them to pay fees.
Former Kentucky Republican Chairman John McCarthy said Democrats had counted on a boost at the polls for many who gained health coverage, but they didn't show up to vote.
Whatever you do, do not take this stuff from the Los Angeles Times lying down or the information on health matters. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week as we give you tips on how to pass your urine test on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.